This is the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we have conversations with everyday martial artists about their histories and how martial arts influence their daily lives. You are listening to the abbreviated version of this podcast, which is the first 20 minutes or so of the show. Please consider supporting the show by subscribing on our Patreon page, www.patreon.com/MALMAG. And for about the price of one coffee shop coffee per month, you can get access to 4 new podcasts each month, 1 week before their YouTube release dates. You also have access to all of our existing shows, which at this point is about 100 hours of shows for you to enjoy. Individual shows can be purchased at our Gumroad page. That is malmag.gumroad.com. In this episode, I sat down in Marina Del Rey at Glen Alla Park with musician, actor, and martial artist Ricky Parrish. You may remember Ricky's reel on our Malmag YouTube news channel. We discuss how he got into martial arts and how it plays a role in his current endeavors with music and acting. Sit back and enjoy. Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, and I find myself down here in Glen Alla Park again in Marina Del Rey, and I'm talking with a newer friend of mine who you may have just seen his making of demo reel on the Martial Arts Lifestyle channel. This is musician and actor Rick, or Ricky, I call him, Parrish. I don't know, do you go by Rick or Ricky?
Anything but Dick.
Okay, all right. We don't call you that unless we're mad at you.
Unless you're mad, yeah.
Unless we're talking behind your back. No. I think we've always called you Ricky down there, which is, you know, term of affection.
Yeah,
you know,
I take it as such.
You might look at it the same way with people calling me Timmy, because you're a pretty tall guy. What are you, 6 foot?
Six, even.
So 6 foot tall. So Rick's pretty athletic looking guy, pretty good size looking guy. So to call him Ricky, you think of like a small kid, and he's not quite that. But it's like calling me Timmy at 6'4".
Yeah.
250. It's like, well, you know,
John.
Exactly. I find it sort of endearing in a way. It's kind of funny. It's, you know, opposite days or whatever. So anyway, we're out here at a park that is a dog park and playground. So you may hear, as you hear the dogs fire up, some dogs and children. So yeah, we're watching little puppies play right now. So anyway, Rick is a student at the Inosanto Academy, which is where I met him. And I actually knew you first as a musician, and then you came and said, hey, I need to have a reel done. And I'm like, oh, you do some acting too.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I've kind of transitioned more towards the acting thing. I've been blessed with the opportunity to have representation, and it's just as exciting as it is terrifying, being that I've only been in this for about 3 months, I would say.
Oh, really?
The
acting?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
I met my manager back in May, I believe, and then she's like, I'm going to make you the next James Dean, and I'm like, yeah, okay.
Whatever. Well, I don't like how that one ended, man. Be careful.
I know, right?
He did like 3 movies and then, you know, got decapitated or something in a car wreck.
Well, luckily, I've already surpassed his age.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah, so, but yeah, we... I kind of held my breath for a couple months, and then she introduced me to a modeling agency and then a theatrical, and here we are now.
All right. Well, that's cool. Well, let's start a little bit about your martial arts, and we'll get into the other stuff. So how did you get involved in martial arts?
So I started very young. It was through my dad. My dad was, I mean, I think like anybody else could say, you know, watching Enter the Dragon in the theater and being enamored by it. And not to go on too much of a tangent, but my father, when he was really young, he got in a car accident and was in a coma for 2 weeks. He was 6 years old.
Wow.
And they didn't think he was going to come to, and he did, and it was a miracle. And the only thing was he had to relearn how to walk and all of his motor skills, and he couldn't really play any sports for a while. And it wasn't until I think he was about 11 or 12, and he saw Enter the Dragon, and he's like, I want to do martial arts. And so my grandparents allowed him to do it, and then he progressed. I believe he did Shotokan for quite a while, and then got his black belt, and then started his own school at 19, and then he started training with Bill Wallace.
Oh, wow.
And then started competing in kickboxing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
So he did like PKA kickboxing back in the day.
He did.
Oh,
and
wow.
then stopped because he faced Rick Rufus, and Rick Rufus knocked him out in the third round.
Okay. Okay.
And he said,
so,
nope.
So he, yeah, okay. That, wow, what an interesting intersection. Okay, so my first karate instructor, Ulysses Owens, was also a kickboxing PKA and kickboxing and boxing competitor and trainer.
Okay.
He fought Rick Rufus twice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, one time he got knocked out from a sort of ducking into a shin and knee type kick, so, you know, borderline gray. And then he lost by decision the second time, and he almost had him, I think Rick actually got saved by the bell or something.
Oh, man.
So there's no doubt that Rick Rufus, especially at that time, so we're talking late 80s into the early 90s.
Man, it was a monster.
This guy was a great kickboxer.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an amazing kickboxer because, you know, I know the level that my instructor was at that time, and I know the people that were at that gym. In fact, there was a pretty exciting champion named Rich Leaping Lopez that trained out of our gym at that time, too. So I know the caliber. We had championship caliber people coming out of that gym. So to have, you know, Rick Rufus beating, you know, these guys, that's a pretty good quality guy. So have you ever seen the sort of infamous fight between him and the Thai boxer?
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes, my dad had that on VHS, and he'd have me watch it over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because it really shows you, you know, styles and the fact that Rufus had him handily beaten in the first round.
Yep.
I mean, he was beating the guy, broke his jaw.
Yeah.
The whole deal. It's just that just shows you, you know, especially with the mentality of the Thai boxers, like it's not over till it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not over till it's over. And then, you know, he came back and leveled in, you know, into those things that the American kickboxers at that time were just not skilled in or used to, which was the leg kicking. And I felt sorry for him at that point. You know, having gotten into Muay Thai myself and just going, oh, I know what he's feeling there, and that's bad. That's rough.
Yes.
And then he and his brother became big Muay Thai advocates after that.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that. They're out of Arizona, out of Phoenix, Rick and Duke Rufus. Yeah, I think they were both big Thai boxing. I may be wrong. I don't think so, though. I'll check, but pretty sure they became kind of big trainers of that and stuff, so... So anyway, that's cool. That's a cool intersection.
Yeah, yeah. And then from there, my dad trained for a little bit with Cass Magda, Guru Cass Magda,
oh, okay.
and Reseda. And then fast forward to when I was born, it was here and there. I mean, there's pictures of me with at 2 or 3 years old with a pair of foam nunchucks, like messing around and kicking and punching and all.
As
that.
Everyone in the audience goes, yeah, I've got my nunchucks pictures too.
Yeah, everybody does.
Everybody
yeah.
does.
And I then didn't do much of it for a little while, and then up until I think it was middle school, I was going through some bit of a rough patch, family wise, just getting bullied a lot, getting my head knocked in.
The old bullied.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough, and I decided to get into Kempo, which I did for, I believe, maybe 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
I all the way up to like blue belt.
That's a pretty good stretch. And you're talking about like the American Ed Parker Kempo?
Yes, yes. My it was with a sensei, Mark Arnott.
Okay.
And I started competing, and then my dad was like, ooh. So then he started training me.
So you lived up in the valley?
No, I lived in
I was going to say, because you said Reseda, and I'm like, oh, man, it'd be cool. So you did the all-valley karate?
I wish, right? No, no. No, I grew up, for the most part, in Pasadena.
Okay.
South Pasadena, Pasadena.
Ah, yeah. Which is where Ed Parker's main school was for many years. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that was out there, and then, yeah, my dad decided to get back into it and was having me kick trees and everything and doing a lot of running. Because he wanted my shins conditioned.
Okay,
because a lot of these guys, and it's so funny. Because
or he wanted to give you something to do to shut you up, go in the backyard and kick a tree for an hour.
That's right. Shut up and go kick a tree, Ricky. So We did a lot of training, and then I know one of the most memorable fights I had was in Pasadena at the Hilton, and they couldn't find anyone that was in the same weight class as me. A lot of people dropped out from that competition for some reason, so I ended up going against an 18-year-old, and I was about 14 or 15.
Ooh, wow. That's a, you know.
It was like a white belt.
Jesus.
And just a brawler.
Yeah.
And
it's
knew
like,
how
here,
to do
I'm gonna put you in with this grown
leg
man.
Takedowns and everything. And so when we went at it, he just took me to the ground, wrapped me into a pretzel, and then just beat me to a bloody pulp and gave me a concussion. And then up until the point
where... And they called it a sport.
Yeah, and then the ref didn't even stop it.
Wow.
And it wasn't until Sensei Frank Trejo ran in, and it was his tournament,
right.
And he stopped it, and then he pulled me aside, and he's like, "You okay?" And I'm like, pissed off.
You're like, I don't
crying.
Know. What am I? Am I a person?
Yeah,
a dog?
I was just out of it.
I don't even
it,
know what I am.
Seeing stars. Right. And he's like, Do you want to win the fight or do you want to win the match? And I was like, I want to win the fight. And he goes, kick his ass. So
yeah.
I went in, and I did a lot of illegal head kicks and
Oy.
Just. I broke his nose,
wow.
And they disqualified me from the match.
Well, there you go.
But I still got second place, which was nice.
Yeah.
And overall, and then...
Well, disqualification's a loss, but it's not a loss.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I collected my medal, I took my pictures, I smiled, then I ran straight to the bathroom and then realized I had a concussion and I was in the hospital.
Wow. Well, I mean, kudos to Frank Trejo. That's a big name. Someone I don't know personally, but I know distinctly by reputation. And that sounds like something a man of that reputation would absolutely do.
Yeah, he's really, really nice guy. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, from there, I stopped a little bit after high school and then found myself around like my first or second year of college wanting to get back into it. So I did a little bit of Wing Chun. And then I thought to myself, why not just get into Jeet Kune Do, because that's what I want to do anyway.
Okay.
And then my dad...
So what made you want to do that? I mean, there's a lot of things out there, and you experiment with a lot of martial arts, so you said it was something I always wanted to do. Why? Where did that come from?
Martial arts in general?
Yeah, I mean, no, Jeet Kune Do.
Jeet Kune Do.
Yeah.
I believe not only because I'm a fanboy, but I love the philosophy behind it.
Okay.
I love the ability to be fluid and... Being somewhat of a rebel myself, I hate being told what to do to a certain extent and saying, this is law and you need to do this because I said so, even if it doesn't make any sense to me. I just like the fact that, like, oh, I can take whatever I like and what works for me and make it work. That's very fascinating to me.
Right.
And learning how to, you know, go with the flow, which I'm still working on. It's hard to do that when you're really stubborn like me.
All right, so Jeet Kune Do, now this sounds like it could be kind of a dumb question, but not necessarily, because, I mean, there's a lot of people, and it is Southern California, so what made you pick Inosanto Academy for that?
Oh, I've got a great story.
Okay,
so
yay.
Last November, so I was working with Cast Magda for about a year or two, and then the pandemic hit, I stopped training.
Oh, so you were training with him that recently?
Yes.
Okay,
yes, I
very
was.
Cool.
And stopped and focused a lot more on my music and playing bars and clubs and everything. And it was last November I had a date with a gal that I had just met like the week prior. And I remember it was on Black Friday. And I picked her up and there was this gentleman who was standing across the street. Gentleman I've seen many times before at the jams at the Rainbow Bar and Grill and at the Whiskey and what have you. And he was like, oh, hey, Ricky, what's up? And I go, oh, nothing much, you know, just kind of small talk.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, what are you doing? Why? What are you? Oh, I got a date. I got a hot date tonight, you know. Just joking around. And then he goes, oh, yeah, who is it? And I go, oh, don't worry about it. Kind of pride a little bit. I didn't think anything of it.
Right, right.
I picked my date up. We go to a bunch of different bars, and I have to be quite honest, it was probably the worst date I ever had. I've never had someone complain so much.
Okay, so I know it's not your current girlfriend that I know.
No, absolutely not. No. This girl would never, ever be my girlfriend in a million years. And we ended up finding ourselves at the Abbey, which I was not aware that it is a gay club. Not that I have any issue with that. But it was like, oh, hey, surprise. Look, I'm like, every, oh, wow.
Look, every guy has to have the accidentally wander into a gay bar experience in their life. You really, like, oh, you really do. You
these,
really do.
These people have better style than me. What's going
exactly.
on here?
Exactly. Oh, that's one okay. thing you'll learn right, so, right quick.
It was supposed to be, how was it advertised to me? Oh, I have some friends I really want to meet. And I'm like, we're on a date. Why did you say that you're going to meet up with some friends? What? Anyway, get there. Last second, she's saying, well, turns out we're not, they're not really my friends. They're a couple that's trying to take me home and do the deed. So, but we're going to go, Ricky, because they have a booth. A VIP booth, and oh. it's bottled service.
All right.
And they're going to pay for everything.
So she's a baller here. She's,
yeah,
she's,
so yeah. she knows how to work the system. She knows what she's doing. We go. I end up having a great conversation with the guy. He ends up being a music producer for Paramount. And
wow.
Yeah, and so I racked their bill up to about $2,000, I think.
Holy.
Yeah. I was pretty angry. I'm like, well, if I'm going to enjoy this, I'm going to enjoy it right.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden... I looked out into the crowd of all the dancing people. It's kind of like one of those horror movies where you kind of see this ominous figure
okay,
staring at
you. Okay, this is funny because I literally just finished watching Fall of the House of Usher last night, which had a lot of those scenes that you're talking about.
Yeah, everyone's moving around exactly. and you see the one guy standing
not
there.
Not moving, yeah, exactly.
Staring into your soul. And it turned out that this particular gentleman was the guy from...
Across the street. Oh, jeez.
Come to find out, this
now,
guy...
Was he there by accident or he followed you there?
He followed us to
Holy
every single
fuck.
Bar.
Wow.
Every single bar that we went to.
Creepy.
And I had no idea until we went to the Abbey.
Wow.
He's like sipping his cocktail and staring into my soul. And I'm like, me? You looking at me? So he disappears.
What?
I forget about
right
it.
Out of the movie.
And... My date is like, I need to use the facilities. Do you mind walking me over there? Because it's crowded and, you know, it's a crazy club. And I'm like, yeah, sure. We walk over and we get to the restroom. Like, are you having a good time? Yada, yada. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, in the midst of this conversation, a gentleman who I saw from across the street comes out of nowhere.
Sucker punch.
Shoves me.
Oh, man.
Shoves me. I fall to the ground. Grabs the girl and strangles her. I grabs her by the neck
what?
And starts shaking her like a Raggedy Ann doll.
Wow.
And to be just, I was like, whoa, what the hell's going on? So I jumped up immediately and I jumped at the guy and just started swinging and we just started going at it.
Yeah.
And I was bobbing, weaving, and everything, and then he clipped me, and I just lost it. I just completely snapped, went unhinged, and I did a double leg takedown, and I just beat him
wow.
with a pulp.
Wow!
And the bouncers came, they pulled us apart, and they were like, "What's going on?" And we had witnesses, and they're like, "Yeah, this other guy started it first. He swung at him, and da da da." And they called the police. The police came. They asked me if I wanted to file charges.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, just get him out of here. And then the rest of the night got even worse after that. But I never saw either of those people ever again.
So Ricky's offering matchmaking services.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
If you want an unusual date, call Ricky.
Yeah. If you want to have a memorable experience, I can set you up with
some
of the worst people.
Oh, my God. Yeah. This literally sounds like, you know, it's a funny, you know, when you... We all have, I think, those stories. You're like, I can tell you the story that you'll think is not real.
Yeah.
You'll think it's a freaking soap opera movie, right?
Yeah. But it was that moment that I thought, wow, I'm slow. It's like there's molasses in my joints.
Wow.
And I'm not what I thought was the confident, sanguine.
Well, do you think that might have been just adrenaline? Because sometimes adrenaline, when it's going on, things slow down.
It could have been, but I just feel like I was so... unconditioned for
okay.
so long.
Yeah.
And then there was also the fear.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
And you're like, oh,
that's
I don't like
the, this. That's the worst part, I think, when you experience that and you go, ooh, never again.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, that was just, I don't ever want to deal with that ever. I never want to be afraid like I was that night.
Well, and it's interesting, and it's something that I think you can talk to because you've now had some literal experience in both, so that, you know, you fought in tournaments. There's a thing about
the competitiveness that's important, but there's a difference when that person really wants to fucking hurt you.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with the person that might not have any skill, because I can't imagine that guy had, you know, black belt skill in anything.
No.
But he had crazy intent.
Yeah.
And that feels so different. That is a frightening thing.
And there, it was also, I mean, the main fear that I think overwhelmed me wasn't necessarily, oh, what is he going to do to me? It's like, oh, what is he going to do to the people I'm around?
Sure, yeah,
of course. And that made me think, like, what if, you know, and now I do have an amazing girlfriend that I love. And
shout
out to Hannah. Love you, Hannah. I love you, baby. But for me, if anything was to ever happen to her, I wouldn't forgive myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's in a strange situation, especially the one you're in, because you're talking about someone you kind of meeting for the first time. Whether it was good or bad, you're still like a decent person.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, what the hell? Yeah. I, because you recognize the guy, you're like, great, I brought this person into this situation somehow. Yeah. So yeah.
And then there's this, yeah, and being the kind of person that I am, I'm like, I want to be able to know that I can not only take care of myself, but yeah, just. I want to be ready for anything.
Okay.
That's really what it was. And I immediately was just like, there's only one guy I want to train with. And that's Guru Dan.
Nice.
I love the people that have come out of that school. My dad's always wanted to train there, and he never got to. And I always wanted to train there. I'm like,
is your dad still around?
He is.
Well, make sure you have him come down sometime.
I know. I've been trying to get him to come in.
Yeah, yeah.
Right now he's trying to rehabilitate his hips. He's been having some hip pain, and he's got to work on getting that. But I got to get him in.
Right.
I got to get him in. But from then, I just was like, I am going to commit to this fully, and I'm going to do this. I want to take this to the highest level I can, and I know the people I'm going to be training with and the people I'm going to meet are going to be like the coolest people in the world, and they are, including yourself.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's been a great journey so far.
Well, that's cool. So I want to get back to the JKD in a second.
Yeah, sure.
But I want to talk to you a little bit about being a musician, because that's when you first came. Dubin was one of them. He said, oh man, Rick's in a band. I'm like, oh cool. So you know, Dubin and I are always talking music, obviously.
Yep.
and movies, I mean, of course. So what got you into music, and what kind of band were you in? What do you play?
Yeah, so I, again, the same person who got me into martial arts, the same person who got me into music, it's my pop.
Uh-huh.
And he's a guitar player, he's not a drummer, but he had played with a lot of people, such as, you know, I'm going to go ahead and name drop.
Yeah, please do.
Eric Clapton, Johnny Hooker, Etta James, Buddy Guy, B.B.
Okay,
King.
That's some names to drop.
And it's, and I always around the house. It was Van Halen, Stevie Ray Vaughan, John Lee Hooker.
Okay,
Beatles,
Dad's got a good
Cream.
Sense, a good taste in music.
All of that.
Yeah.
And I knew that I loved it. I mean, I was just as passionate about music as I was about martial arts and dinosaurs and Godzilla as a 5-year-old kid.
So if there was a kung fu dinosaur that played rock and roll,
yeah,
it's like, that's my favorite.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I think that, you know what? I'm going to start typing that down.
Yeah.
Script. I started with guitar. I couldn't get the damn thing to work to save my life. And I remember just slowly getting into drums. I can't even remember the exact.
And this concludes the abbreviated version of the podcast. Please consider supporting the program by going to www.patreon.com/MALMAG and subscribing to the show. You can also purchase this individual episode or any individual episode at our Gumroad page. That's MALMAG.gumroad.com. Thank you for listening to this episode with Ricky Parrish. Coming up next week, we have Oregon's Joe Heller. Our Malmag online store at martialartslifestylemagazine.com has a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Krabiker Bong. Timmy B's brand now selling in Japan as well. Beautiful Timmy B's brand shirts and Dos Manos shirts are available
with new t-shirt designs and more products coming soon. An online course in the Dos Manos method for FMA is available under the Courses tab. More courses coming soon. Check out the Places to Train tab to find schools near you, and click on the events calendar page to see what seminars and events are happening all around the world. And of course, visit our main page for articles on the martial arts. Music by Jack L. Relic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.